ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For years, art buyers have been told the same thing.
He was an internationally acclaimed artist
whose work is available in Australia through only one gallery.
His works were selling really well.
But workers start to notice something unusual.
He's not contactable by any means.
They couldn't find any presence of him online.
In Search of the Missing Artist, a new three-part series that investigates the strange business of making art. Search Background Briefing wherever you get your podcasts.
Over the past 8 years, the diagnosis of ADHD among Australian adults has surged, especially among women. And you might be surprised to find out where the ADHD capitals are in Australia. Today, Norman Swan on his Four Corners investigation into data that's never been collated before and whether it shows ADHD is being overdiagnosed. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Norman, Frio or Fremantle in Perth, it's this old port area, although it's pretty ritzy nowadays, but you have found something really unique about the suburb, haven't you? Because it has a much higher rate of people diagnosed with ADHD than anywhere else in the country.
Yep, it's the hottest hotspot.
Mm.
So Four Corners has been looking at ADHD in adults in Australia, and it's very hard to get data.
Mm.
So we commissioned a group at the University of New South Wales, the Medicines Intelligence Research Program, who work with the Australian Bureau of Statistics, to look at ADHD diagnoses. Now, there's no record of who gets diagnosed with ADHD in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to infer it from who fills out prescriptions for ADHD drugs. So it doesn't matter how many scripts you fill in a year, you just got to have filled it at least once. And so we can see for the first time ever, actually, in Australia, the geographic spread and variation of what we infer to be ADHD diagnosis rates. It's a dramatic map, and Western Australia stands out. So to June 2024, 4.4% of adults in Fremantle filled a script for an ADHD drug. This is an extraordinary rise, by the way, over the last few years.
Mm.
And you look at women under the age of 44, it comes up roughly around 6%. But since then, the rate of prescriptions for ADHD drugs have gone up by another 30%, in fact, more than that. So then you're up around 8%.
Wow.
When you ask the experts what actually is the rate of ADHD in the community, it's between 2.5 and 3%. So something's going on because you've just got these sky-high diagnosis rates.
Right, yeah. So in a suburb like Fremantle, experts would expect a rate of around 2.5% as everywhere else, but it's at 4.4%.
On average.
On average. So the question is, of course, why, which we will get to. But before we go on, I guess, why don't we just reflect on what the symptoms of ADHD are so we can get a better understanding of exactly what it is.
It is a neurodevelopmental disorder, meaning that it's been there probably since birth. In other words, you've got a genetic predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot diagnose ADHD accurately without evidence of it being there in childhood in some shape or form.
Mm.
School reports, teacher reports, there needs to be correlation because there really isn't any such thing as ADHD which suddenly appears in adulthood. So it's a neurodevelopmental disorder and involves impulsivity. It involves problems with emotional regulation. It involves hyperactivity, which includes this inner restlessness. There are other features of it as well. And the key here with ADHD is that it's not a simple condition. There's no test for it. It's a matter of clinician judgment, which is why this variation may arise. Two clinicians may not agree on whether or not somebody has ADHD. And if you get it wrong, it can be serious, because these symptoms could be symptoms of another mental health issue, which if it goes undiagnosed and untreated, means the person could come to harm.
Okay, well, Norman, let's return to Fremantle, because as you said, experts would expect about 2.5% on average of the population to have ADHD there, but it's far, far higher. But what about other places? Now, you spoke to Dr. Michael Folster from UNSW, and he has really been analysing this data, I suppose, to find the hotspots across the country. So what has he found?
Yes, he was one of the team that did this analysis for us at the University of New South Wales. Wow, Michael, this looks amazing. What have we here?
So this is a map that shows the proportion of adults aged 20 to 65 who filled at least one prescription for ADHD medicine.
So this is numbers of people?
Absolutely. It's effectively the number of people being treated for ADHD.
So one of the first places we went to was Sydney. He asked me to guess what I thought we were going to find in Sydney in terms of the high prevalence areas for filled prescriptions.
Well, I would have thought the higher income areas, North Shore, eastern suburbs.
Let's take a look.
It's not.
No, we actually see a really different pattern. So here in Sydney, we see the highest rates of ADHD medicine use in adults are in the inner west in around Marrickville and around the Blue Mountains, and that's at about 3.4%.
And then if you go to Melbourne, it's not the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, Toorak, Armidale and so on. It's the inner northern suburbs. It's like Brunswick and Darebin South by a long way.
Okay, well, let's unpack that a bit more then and try and figure out with you what is going on. Now, there is much more awareness, first of all, isn't there, of this condition?
Yeah.
You know, people sometimes show up to a doctor already knowing that they have this or thinking they do.
I hesitate to recommend this. In fact, I don't. But you just go hashtag ADHD in TikTok or Instagram. Mm.
People with ADHD always feel like they have so much to do. They have such a huge to-do list.
When they achieve something, they won't feel any sense of accomplishment, only a mild sense of relief that it's done.
If they have the algorithm will start delivering you short videos, here are the typical features, and filling your head with stuff that is, while not inaccurate, it misleads you into thinking this is the only possibility that it's ADHD and convincing you that your symptoms are the symptoms of ADHD. We live in an economy where attention is the currency. So your mobile phone, social media, we're on Instagram the whole time. We have kids to look after. We've got high cognitive load. We've got aging parents. We're the sandwich generation. And therefore, we just feel overwhelmed by the stuff that's hitting us. We feel that we can't cope with all this. We can't pay attention to one thing. I'm not completing tasks. And some of that will be people, particularly women with ADHD, who've not been diagnosed. And some will be misleading yourself into thinking that the cognitive load of life is, in fact, ADHD.
And you point out in your story that there are actually clinics that are set up just to diagnose ADHD. You go and do some sort of questionnaire. It costs you a lot of money, thousands and thousands of dollars. And then you go and have a telehealth appointment so you can get the medication. Just explain that, because there's concern about that, isn't there?
So there's been the growth of large telehealth clinics who do a broad range of psychiatry, but in fact, their core offering is ADHD and autism spectrum disorder diagnosis. So there are questionnaires which are well validated, which you can do yourself, which some people are misled into thinking are diagnostic. And they really are only just a bit of help for the psychiatrist. People like Professor David Coghill at the University of Melbourne, who's one of Australia's leading experts, in fact, an international expert in ADHD, are worried about the quality of assessment.
Questionnaires are not accurate enough, and they do lead to what we call a lot of false positive recognition of ADHD.
A psychiatrist should not rely on these questionnaires for diagnosis. They are not diagnostic tools. Yet anecdotally, we hear of clinics where the psychiatrist accepts the findings of the questionnaire, gives you a short consultation, and you go away with a script for a psychostimulant. And we don't know the rate at which they say no.
We hear a lot of feedback from people living with ADHD and those who suspect they have ADHD that their assessment has been very quick, but it's really consisted of just filling in those questionnaires, having the doctor look at them, and then having a rubber stamp. That's not acceptable.
Telehealth is turning out to be a bit of a problem in a few different areas, and it may well be an issue here with ADHD.
All right, the other question you had, Norman, was about the influence of the big pharmaceutical companies and the impact, I suppose, they have on doctors and the panel of experts that come up with the guidelines on how these drugs should be prescribed. Now, just to note, you, as a doctor, you have received yourself a payment from one of these big companies before.
Yes, I gave a speech at a conference sponsored by a pharmaceutical company that produces ADHD medications. So I'm well aware of the issues here. Mm. And one of the people we spoke to was Professor Lisa Cosgrove of the University of Massachusetts Boston, who studied conflict of interest and what can happen when you take the pharmaceutical industry's shilling.
People get defensive because the implication is I've done something wrong. And that's not the case. Identifying conflicts of interest is in no way suggesting that someone has engaged in research fraud or done anything wrong. Rather, the real crux of the issue is that those ties engender inevitably implicit bias. We're all vulnerable to implicit bias, and we're blissfully ignorant of the way in which that implicit bias can be manifest.
And when you look at the references used to back up what's called the National Guideline for Clinical Practice in ADHD, which is, if you like, the Bible for people to use to make the diagnosis, which is not a bad guideline, by the way, but a third of the references that they use to back it up have people on the authorship line who've received pharmaceutical funding. And then when you look at the prescribing guide in Australia, which is advising doctors on the selection of drugs and how they should be used, again, not a bad prescribing guide, but nonetheless, several of the members of that committee had received pharmaceutical industry funding. Mm. And so it just creates a problem of trust. Where does the bias arise? And people could actually argue that with me. Well, you know, am I biased in my reporting of the issue? People make that judgment when they see the four corners.
All right. Well, Norman, you've had a really good look at this very insightful data, the first we've ever had, as you say, in Australia. I guess the question people are really asking now is, why is it then that there are these pockets across Australia, in Fremantle, for instance, that have this higher rate? Did you get to the bottom of that? It's complicated, isn't it?
It is very complicated, and you can only speculate. Mm. For those of you who know Australia and they know Fremantle, they know Brunswick, they know Marrickville and Sydney, very similar populations. So it's a younger population, well-educated. They do have money, but not a lot of money, but they do have money. They are probably more accepting of neurodivergence, and there's less stigma around it in those suburbs. Mm. And they're more aware and more concerned about their health and well-being. What's hard to explain is why women dominate. That's partly catch-up, but we've probably gone beyond catch-up. And I think it's just the general problem that women have as they reach midlife. They are unfairly squeezed by life. Mm. And some of those women do have ADHD, and some women probably don't, but they've other issues that need to be dealt with.
Yeah. And on the other hand, of course, Norman, it's so costly to get a diagnosis. There must be people within society that can't actually afford a consultation at this point.
That's the other side of our data. Mm. There are ADHD deserts, and there's huge ADHD deserts in Australia where the rate of diagnosis is far below where it should be. So Fairfield in southwest Sydney is the second lowest area for filled prescriptions in the country. And if you look at where they sit in terms of the prevalence of filled prescriptions compared to the actual prevalence of ADHD, 90% of adults with ADHD in Fairfield are likely to be missed.
Mm, right. Well, Norman, of course, people should always speak to their own doctor for specific advice. But what's your message to those who are hearing this and thinking, maybe I or someone I know has ADHD. How careful do they need to be to make sure they get the right diagnosis?
Everybody should have a GP that they know and they trust. And sometimes that's a bit of a journey. Mm. People can get so locked in to the belief that they have ADHD. This is something which you really want to be sure about with your doctor and be open to that there are other possibilities here. And you want to find a psychiatrist or a clinical psychologist who doesn't conduct what they call ADHD assessments. They conduct a proper psychological assessment of your mental health and well-being and come to a diagnosis, one of which might be ADHD, but another might be others. So it's just being careful and slow and not jumping to conclusions and not seeing a clinician who jumps to conclusions.
Dr. Norman Swan produced his report for Four Corners, which you can watch in full tonight on ABC TV or on iView. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily. We'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.